This open source mentoring interview of Alex Boguski was conducted at the Fuqua School of Business at Duke University. Alex Boguski is the Executive Creative Director at Crispin Porter & Boguski.
Hello, Alex. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Excellent. Thank you for participating today.
Great.
Hey, Alex. How are you doing? I'm Matt King. Like you said, I'm another student here at the Duke University Fuqua School of Business, and we're really honored to get the chance to talk with you today. And as you know, this recording is going to be available for students across Duke University and really anyone who wants to download it from online. So,
can you do anything to make my voice lower and sexier?
We'll see what we can do.
All right.
So just to start out, for the benefit of myself and anyone who's listening to this, can you just give us a little bit of background about kind of where you came from within the industry and where you are today and kind of how you came to that point?
I started as a, really it was sort of a family business where both my folks were designers. And so I came into it, I did not go to college, and I did a little bit of community college, and I think my parents, mostly my mom, concerned for my future, taught me to do what were called mechanicals at the time, which was where you would sit down and you would paste together all the pieces of an ad that had to be produced, and there was a certain way to do it and a certain craft to it with overlays and markups and things like that, and how to set type, and I learned all that kind of as a the family trade, and from there, I was trying to just windsurf in Hawaii and having a pretty nice time, and I called back after being out there for a while, and I said, listen, you know, sell my car and send out all my stuff, because I think I want to just, you know, be a professional windsurfer.
Yeah.
And my dad was kind of horrified at that. So he said, well, why don't you come back and try to get a job? And I said, well, you know, there's nothing really going there. He's like, I'll get you an interview someplace, right? So he knew people in advertising, being a designer, and he got me an interview at a advertising agency. And I came back, did the interview, and unfortunately got the job. Wound up, you know, kind of starting my career in advertising and ending my professional windsurfing career. And from there, I started in the agency because of my background as a mech artist. I started basically, I thought I'd come in doing art direction, but then I could have come in doing mechanicals. I actually came in even below that, where I was what used to be a stat boy. And there were big cameras in dark rooms, and people would slide stuff under the door to you. And it was your job to kind of change sizes and take pictures, and all for the mechanical artists. And so I would do that all day, and then, you know, come out at the end of the day, and the sunlight would hurt my skin and my eyes. And from there, I got a chance to sit. It's funny because I came in and I was thinking that I was going to be a designer. So they had just landed a new account, Mayor Schuler's, which was a very big deal in Miami. And so I spent the whole weekend coming up with ideas and designs and layouts and stuff like that. And I had this pad full of stuff. And when I, you know, and when I got there and I got the keys to the stat room, I kind of like sheepishly hid my pad away and never brought it back in. And kind of fell in line. But from there, I had my first goal, I recall, was that I wanted someone to ask my opinion. Because it was really obvious no one cared what I thought about anything. And anyway, it's fun because, you know, I achieved that goal, and I don't know, I think it probably took about a week or 2 weeks, but I remember achieving that goal and then, you know, setting goals subsequently, and pretty soon in an agency environment, there's just so much to do that if you're not a complete screw up, you get more and more chances, and each time you don't drop the ball, you get more because everyone's got too much to do and they're trying to pawn it off on somebody else.
What do you think are some of the things that made you successful then? You know, coming from the windsurfing, you said without the college background, how did you get to be so successful in the industry?
I idea. I mean, I can tell you a story. When I was eventually at that agency, I became an art director, and I walked into my boss's office, and I said that I wanted to go to this seminar, advertising seminar that I had read about. And it was, I think it was in Tampa or Orlando, and I was wondering if he would pay for it. And he turned to me and said, "You know what? If you learn anything in life," he said, "learn to never be afraid to invest in yourself," which is basically a nice way to say, "I'm not going to pay for it, but here's a little lesson." And I was pretty naive. I think at the time, I didn't even hear the "I'm not going to pay for it" part. I just heard the wisdom, and I thought, yes, what a great idea. I'll pay for this. And anyway, I went to this seminar, and there was a lot of great ad people talking, but one of them was Lee Clow, who's the creative director at Chiat Day, who's done a lot of amazing work, and a lot of work that I remember as a kid and as a, you know, a guy just getting into the business, thinking, wow, advertising something completely different than I thought it was when I'd look at some of the stuff they do. So all these people were talking, and I don't know if you've ever seen or met Lee Clow, but he's like this older, hippie, long-haired surfer dude in flip-flops and backpack. And I noticed him, because he's really tall, I noticed him cruising around the seminar. And I knew his name, but I had never put the visual together with the name. And all these people were getting up, and they were saying how tough they are on clients, and how if the client doesn't buy their work, they fire the client or they jump out of a window or whatever. And I was sitting there in the seminar thinking, I'm getting out of this business because this is just, it's too confrontational. And I don't think I have what it takes. So then Lee got up, and it was that dude with the long hair and the, you know, flip-flops, and I'm like, oh my God, Lee Clow is that dude, which I thought was very cool because I was kind of that dude, but a cleaned-up version and a tie and, you know, some sort of short haircut, trying to be a businessman, and Lee started talking, and he said, listen, you know, more great work dies at our shop than most any place, I would bet, and all we do is we just make more, and we just keep making more until the client gets sick of seeing us, and they fire us or they buy something great. And I thought, well, that I can do. You know, I can work hard, and I can maybe work harder than anybody else. So that was what I applied myself towards doing, and I think that there's obviously very talented people in every business, and you do run into sometimes the most talented people just not having a good work ethic. And, you know, in the end, the average talent who really puts forth the time takes them down. Mm-hmm. So that's all I've done. I've just kind of busted my ass.
Jumping ahead a little bit, you've worked on and organized a lot of amazing campaigns around, like, Mini Cooper, Burger King, Truth Campaign. Looking back up to this point, what's been the one that you've been the most proud of, and why is that?
Well, I think that it's the Truth Campaign is something that you don't get a lot of chances to do things like that. And there are, you know, one aspect obviously is the fact that you get to save lives and use, you know, advertising to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that being the thing that really excited me about it when we first got the chance to pitch it in Florida, was that one time I had been at the beach and a guy was drowning and eventually, you know, didn't come up anymore. And I ran out into the water and I grabbed him and brought him in, and there were already like ambulances there and stuff because so many people had drowned at the beach that day. Like there were five drownings, something ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it was a really great feeling because the guy, he was dead when I got to him, and I was pumping his lungs and, you know, foam was coming out, and then they brought him up on the beach and the paramedics revived him, and, you know, he's fine. that's a cool feeling if you're, you know, lucky enough to be in that position, and then to be able to duplicate it using advertising and do it, you know, several thousand times over, it just kind of is in a special place. But it's something that I've been involved with, and you don't really want to feel like it's hard to pick a favorite. Other than what that was about, that makes it a favorite.
Uh-huh.
But I tend to hope that my favorites are things that are still coming down the road.
Yeah. Well, as you're looking down the road, how do you select? I'm sure there's a lot more people that are wanting to work with you than you have time to work with. So how are you selecting who you want to work with? So, for example, a Mini Cooper versus maybe a more conservative company like P&G, which would be the type of companies that you would want to work with? Which do you think you could be the most effective with?
It's a good question. We have a really strange approach to business and new business, and it's the thing about advertising that makes it tricky is that it's this. I mean, people hate using this word, but it's some sort of blend of like art and commerce, right?
Uh-huh.
So, what seemed to be very logical decisions that are kind of no-brainers in terms of, hey, should we take this account? It's a lot of money. You know, we can grow the agency. We could do this and that. They don't always they make practical sense, but they've never been the decisions that we've necessarily made. So, a long time ago, we decided we would take small national accounts over really big local accounts because we thought that we had to get national. And then within those national accounts, you have to work with like-minded people who you think are going to like the kind of work that you're going to do. And it's just a gut feeling. And when it's good, you know it. And when it's not good, you kind of rationalize that it's good for a while. But my partners are amazing. You know, like we might have a big account, but we all know when it's not working, and that we're going to have to make a change. And it really boils down to the fact two things. One is you get this feeling when you're driving to work, like, I'm not sure I want to go in today. Like, maybe there's some other things I'd rather do. I never want to have that feeling. You know, I hate having that feeling. And that's really been one of the things that's guided us, is just that gut feeling. Are you anxious to get to work that day? If not, figure out why, what's going on. And when we sit down, we'll usually come to the same conclusions. Like, you know what, this thing, it's not fun to work on, and no one really is having any fun. And mm-hmm. obviously we can make people work on it because they need a paycheck, and that's what they're probably used to from working other jobs anyway. But we have a rule, whereas if we don't want to work on it, we don't ask other people to work on it. And so it's hard to say up front how you make that decision. I think that it's very much personalities, you know?
Mm-hmm.
What are the people like? Do you think it might work? Is there something interesting about the brand? Is there a problem that you think advertising can help? Because that's the other thing that, you know, sometimes you get asked to do things, and you're sure that the help that's needed isn't something that you can necessarily bring. And that's not a good situation to get into either.
Within advertising right now, definitely the 30-second TV spot, that's definitely dying. And, you know, we're looking at some of these things that you've done, like the subservientchicken.com, that have had a lot of viral marketing success. So as you're looking to take some of these new projects on, are you looking to take on more of these types of projects where you can be really creative and do more of this viral type marketing, or kind of what's your approach right now?
Well, you know, our thing that we talk about is that basically we're working to make advertising obsolete. The future is that there is no advertising.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think we overstate that, but it's not viral for viral's sake. and it's not, you know, we haven't really pushed into areas because we thought that there was an opportunity in that area to change a dynamic. It's just you're just looking for ways to cheat the existing system in a way that's going to help your clients. So, you know, right now, viral is something you hear a lot about. What we're mostly about is trying to push closer to the product, right? I mean, if there's a theme to how we approach things, is advertising is really expensive and it's really sometimes not the most effective thing because it sits so far away from the product. You know, a Super Bowl spot costs $6 million, partly because of the audience, but partly because, you know, you're paying to broadcast to these people about something that they're not even remotely close to or potentially even interested in, whereas it's real cheap to put a message on a cup,
mm-hmm.
right? So anytime we're working with a client, we're doing kind of an internal audit, and we're saying, okay, what are the existing touch points? What media is part of the way you do business already? And that would be step one, and then something like that, we might find a Burger King cup that had, I think it's something like 2 Super Bowl impressions worth of media every 2 weeks or something. It's outrageous, yeah. Right? And when we started working with them, it said Burger King on it. And I would assume that most people in a Burger King know they're in a Burger King, so there's a better use potentially for that cup. And so that, you know, that's the kind of places we'll work, and then we'll work from as close in as we can get to the product, and then work out. And then in some cases, you'll see us invent ways to make a product experience a marketing experience. So, you know, 2 examples I could give you on that would be when we launched the mini convertible, we put a little seal over the button to raise the roof, and we had the dealers deliver all the cars with the roof down. And, you know, even if it was like, unless it was raining, but if it was cold as hell or whatever, you got your convertible with the roof down, and you had to break the seal that said, you know, hey, before you put the top up, you know, just ask yourself, do you really have to? And we thought, you know, there's a place we can make a great branding statement. We can really change the way people perceive their car. They'll talk about it. They'll tell somebody else, like, hey, here was this experience that happened to me when I picked up the car. And it's powerful because it's part of the product. And the other one we did recently was with the Volkswagen GTI. We created this little icon figure called a Fast. And when you got your GTI, you also got a Fast. And you know, here in the agency, we have the ability to make products now or design products with 3D CAD design and also Fast prototypers. So it was about 5 weeks from the time that we have a 3D printer. We created this character. We did a 3D printout of it, took it to a meeting, presented it to the client, talked to him about what we wanted to do with it, packaged it up, sent it to some factories, and had 17,000 of them made in about a 5 week period, from prototype to done and in the car delivered when you picked up your GTI. And that's for us, that's a really, and it has been for consumers too and fans of the brand, it's a really powerful experience compared to the television that went with it that was cool and everything. But what was most cool about the television for people is when they realized this thing's real, you know? And so that's kind of where we push. And most recently, we've been working with Haggar. Do you know Haggar?
Yeah.
It's like a kind of beat-up men's brand that, uh-huh. you know, invented Sansibelt slacks and stuff. And we have a deal with those guys. It's kind of cool because we own part of the company and have pushed way into product design and the experience design. We're creating mannequins that are different than other kinds of mannequins. And, you know, the whole, really the product. And And I think that in a lot of cases, interactive and some of that media feels like it's a little closer, right? Because you're maybe a click away. And so I think that's why that stuff feels better, but it's not that we're trying to be an interactive or trying to be a guerrilla shop or trying to be viral. We don't really use those terms. It's all just advertising, trying to do away with advertising.
You touched on something there that's definitely very hot with consumer goods companies and restaurants, et cetera, as they're going through advertising, is proving that the advertising is effective. And I'm sure this is something you get all the time, is how are you proving that this advertising is effective whenever, especially when you're doing stuff that hasn't been done before and is very hard to measure?
Yeah. Well, it's a funny question, we only go by one thing. We have all sorts of brand measures and brand trackers, and they're in place on pretty much all the brands, and you can measure purchase intent, and there's sophisticated ways to measure the advertising and, you know, product connection and brand values, and you can track where you're headed on all that stuff. But the one we really go by is sales. And the reason why is that people will never allow there to be a connection between advertising and sales unless it's a negative one. But, you know, we've been at it long enough to know that if sales aren't good, you're going to get fired eventually. So I don't want to be in a position where, you know, I've launched some work, sales are going down, and I'm saying, but look at the brand tracker.
Uh-huh.
It's not a viable long-term position, so we don't really spend a lot of time as an agency doing that, but we do track all that stuff just as a heads up to make sure we're not making any crazy mistakes.
Well, kind of along those same lines, this summer I did my internship working for Pepsi, which obviously does a lot of advertising, and there's also a lot of brand managers in training here at the School of Business. And what kind of advice would you give all of us on the advertising side about how we should view ourselves whenever we're working with advertisers, about the type of leeway to give them? And I'm sure you deal with a lot of pushback from brand managers, and how do you balance all that, and how would you recommend us approaching that situation?
Are you saying what advice would I give to someone who would potentially be a client of mine at a brand?
Correct, yeah. So if we're working with you, what kinds of things would you like for us to keep in mind as we're working with ad agencies?
Man, I wish I had thought about that. This is a real opportunity, huh? gosh. You know what? My advice would be to push yourself beyond the obvious, you know? I think that there's a lot of time where you might work with a brand manager, and I don't know if it's the training or where it comes from, but there's a lot of cliche input that you might get, you know, and it might be like logo size, and you might be and it might be about number of product mentions, or another one that's very common is you know, how early in a commercial, say, the product gets mentioned, or how early the logo comes in. Those things, there is no correlation. No one's ever made any correlation on those things. So, and if you think about the most powerful advertising that you've ever seen, it probably either violated or had nothing to do with any of that stuff. You know, the really good clients are the ones that are looking for real tensions, you know, with the consumer. Something that's gonna be a real part of their lives and be relevant because it's dealing with something that they're dealing with, you know. And it tends to be braver work because you're not dealing with cliches, you're not saying the same old thing, it's not new and improved. You're finding out some real hot buttons, and you're pulling those, you're pushing those buttons, you're pulling those levers, and then when you look at the work, look at it on that basis. You know, once you've gotten to a strategy that you believe in, how well is it just going to just deliver this strategy? Forget the trappings of advertising or the typical aspects of, you know, logo goes here, happens this, yeah, this longer. None of that stuff matters. All that really matters is you have a really potent idea, and you've delivered it in a way that the consumer's probably not expecting. If you spend your time with that, you'll be a great client. And I think the other thing that makes a great client is somebody that's just believes in advertising. You know, like there's for whatever reason, a lot of skepticism about advertising. There's never skepticism that it doesn't work, right? Uh-huh. If it's something that people would like it to work on. Now, if it's something like cigarettes, everyone's like, yeah, it works, right? We've been brainwashed. I don't know why that is, but people have this very strange relationship with advertising. But it does work, you know, and it works like crazy, and it's a powerful tool, and you've got to use it responsibly, and you've got to think about it. But you put out the right stuff that, and you change culture, you tweak culture a little bit, and you do it in a way that helps the product that you're working on. And mm-hmm. I think if you focus in on that and steer clear of just the simple pat input, then you could be a great client.
Well, Alex, we want to be mindful of your time. We realize it's been close to half an hour, and have a couple just quick questions at the end for you. One would be, a big concentration for us here is brand management, so a lot of us here are going to be working with ad agencies after we leave here. Who would be some people, some colleagues of yours, of people like you're talking about Lee Cloud, that have been influential on you, for you, that if any of us could reach out to in the future, just get additional mentoring in this area?
I mean, I could get mentoring from these people probably. I mean, you know, Lee Clow, huge hero, was always terrified to even speak to him. So, God bless you if you've got the guts. I finally talked to him. He's a very nice guy. He's not. You don't have to be afraid of him, but I was. I would see him in places like Cannes, and I couldn't even go over to introduce myself. Uh-huh. And this is after I was a fairly famous ad guy. I was just completely intimidated. I think Dan Wyden obviously has been a guy who has done, he's changed to me. When you change what advertising is, that's the ultimate. And obviously advertising was one thing before Dan and a very different thing now. And same thing with Lee. He is a huge hero of mine. I think John Hagerty, not as familiar with, I've met him a couple times, but has been a part of, you know, pretty much so much of the great, great British work that would come to mind. So, and then Jeff Goodby and Rich Silverstein, I think those guys are total studs too.
So out of all these people, or in addition to anyone else, if you could have one ideal mentor that you could sit down and have one of these calls with, who would that be if you could get that opportunity?
If I could do one, that's not, it would probably have to be Lee, just because for me, I just feel like a bit of a, you know, kindred spirit, just, you know. He's a Southern California surfer guy, I think he's done it his way the whole time, you know, the thing for me right now is how these guys, it's a tough business, you know, it's a grueling, grueling business, and I look at Lee and I look at Dan, and these guys have been doing it for longer than I have, and they're still kicking ass, and I just don't know if I can put up with it that long. I don't know if I can last. That would be my big question, is like, how do I keep going, you know?
I'd like to thank you so much, Alex, for this time. One of the things that we do to show our gratitude for you being able to give us this time is we're going to try to set you up with the mentor that you talked about, and see if we can connect you with him for an interview opportunity.
Oh, you could do that. I actually interviewed him, though. Maybe we should pick a different one, because I've interviewed...
Oh, you have?
Maybe I should interview Dan, then.
Okay.
Because they did there's a video series. Do you know, what's it called? It's called The Iconoclast.
Yes. It's Robert Redford? No, it's...
Yeah. The people that produced that also did a series for creativity, and they had different creatives interview one another, and Lee and I did one. So maybe we would be better to do Dan.
Okay.
Who is also, between the two, there's really no way to pick for me. So I would be equally stunned and honored to do either one.
Well, thank you so much, Alex. Is there any questions you have for us?
Not really.
No.
What should I be asking?
No. Just in case you might want to know any details or so what we do or the things that we're going to do with the interview. But
is there anything public that you can tell us about the next big campaign that we can look out for that you're working on?
Oh man, I don't think there is. I'm a PR person. That's your formal answer. Thanks.
I was going to say thanks a lot because you've done a lot of awesome stuff, and it's a lot of the advertising that you work on is some of the stuff that makes us exciting to go into marketing. So thanks for the work and for spending the time with us.
That's great, and you know, if you become clients, be great ones, because there really are some. I was on the phone with one of our clients at Miller yesterday, and I couldn't help, because she was so great, I couldn't help but tell her, I was like, you are a great client, I have to tell you that, because she just, I guess the other thing that I would add, just on the client thing, is because what she did is, she went in and she fought for what she believed in, uh-huh. which was some of the work that, you know, and it's not, I don't want her to fight for anything she doesn't believe in, but so often in these big companies, the work doesn't have a champion. You know, and it's either the structure or it's just the culture. But if you can champion work, you can get it through some cultures that you wouldn't think you'd get it through, and you will become such a hero to your agency, and they will bleed for you, and the work will get better and better. So, you know, that could be huge. So I hope you guys become clients, and I hope you become, obviously you'll be great clients because you think about advertising already. A lot of them, I don't think we're ever thinking about advertising, so.
So Alex, please just tell us to stop whenever you need to go, but I had another question. This is Patrick. Who are some of the best designers that you see out there?
I wish I could tell you. I really don't follow it that closely anymore. I mean, I'm a funny guy in terms of advertising in that I don't have they have like Creativity Online, and they have what's the other one? Ad Critic Online, mm-hmm. and you can go on. I don't have a password like go look at stuff, and I don't read any of the industry rags or anything. I kind of live in a bubble, so I couldn't tell you who my favorite designers are.
So where do you get your inspiration? I mean, you say you don't read some of the...
I don't know. I'm kind of... There's a big school of thought that you have to, like, recharge your inspiration batteries, you know, that you've got to, like, stop working and look around you. I don't really do that. I kind of just work all the time. You know, I pick up the paper when I'm on an airplane. I read a book here and there. I really am pretty focused. We tend to really, our culture here is we're trying to impress each other, just the person down the hall. We don't really know what's happening in the real world, and you know, I think our feeling is if we can impress each other, ultimately, hopefully the world is digging it too. really look outside for inspiration, and I don't really know. I'll tell you another thing about us that maybe makes some sense of it, is we don't believe that creativity is a moment. You know, our process and our theory is that creativity is about the process. So ideas mutate and grow, and they rarely come out as this fully formed, perfect thing, you know? And in fact, a lot of our work that people like has begun as something radically different than what people were ultimately exposed to. And you know, there's another thing that our clients, God bless them, are uniquely prepared for is, you know, when you work with CPB, it's kind of a ride. You know, it's going to be more work for the clients because we don't ever really stop kind of the creative process. The creative process is the production process. It is the planning process. It's the research process. It's all of it. So it really takes a lot of twists and turns as it goes, you know, through creation.
Well, thank you very much, Alex, for your time, and thanks, Lisa. Thank Lisa as well. And
okay, we'll do. It was fun and great questions. I get interviewed a lot, and it's usually the same questions over and over. And I don't, maybe because you guys don't work for the press.
Yeah. We'll try and keep it that way.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for your time.
Yeah. Super cool. Okay. Thanks.
Thank you, guys.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this interview. This interview is protected by the United States copyright law and cannot be copied, transmitted, or redistributed without prior permission from the International Mentoring Network Organization.